Welcome to Not Artificially Sweetened, a weekly podcast where we reflect on all things diabetes. Your hosts are specialist physician Stan Landau and diabetes specialist nurse Michael Brown. We are passionate about using our talents to change lives for the better. Our mission is to build bridges of insight and understanding between people with diabetes and the health professionals that facilitate their care. Nothing is off the table here as we discuss real people, their real issues and stories, and together discover real answers to many vexing practical issues in diabetes and its management.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 36 of Not Artificially Sweetened. This free education program is provided to you by the CDE Academy. Remember, you can download this podcast and our 35 previous episodes on many downloadable platforms such as Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you like us, give us a share. And many thanks, as always, to our listeners for providing content and feedback and asking those interesting questions on podcast at cdediabetes.co.za. Welcome, Michael Brown.
Hi there, Stan. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. And by the time this podcast goes out, we will have already had our annual postgraduate forum coming up in the next few days while we record this. And I look forward to giving some feedback to our listeners, whether you're a person living with diabetes or someone caring for somebody with diabetes, or in fact, you yourself are a healthcare provider.
For sure. I think it's going to be a great weekend. You've curated an amazing program. And I think if you're a health professional working in the field of diabetes, you should be there.
As busy as it is preparing for a large congress, it's always nice to reflect on what happens in the clinic this week. And one of the miracles of nature is seeing twins, whether you're in clinical practice or you actually see twins or triplets or even more fascinating stuff. So what happened this week is I saw a set of twin brothers, both married, both in their middle years, and each one has a very different trajectory in terms of their diabetes. And the fellow I saw second asked a question of his brother and wanted to know why his brother was on a particular kind of insulin, you know, twice a day, and why his own experience with diabetes had been fairly bland. He was only on one or two oral anti-diabetes medications. Made me think that even if you're an identical twin, no two people's diabetes course will be identical. And that's very important because very often we hear in the clinic, people like to make comparisons against, you know, I know somebody who was on this insulin and they went blind and, you know, the pharmacist accidentally told me that this pill is reserved for people with so-called severe diabetes. And it took a little bit of time, spent some of the visit talking about how different people's pancreases function in different ways and how some people are able to maintain their insulin production over a longer period of time and others land up on insulin much sooner. So in type 2 diabetes particularly, there is a very wide variance between how one person will experience their diabetes compared to the next, even if you're a twin. Mm-hmm. And that's very important not to make comparisons in terms of treatments, outcomes, and in fact, the diabetes progression.
Right. With diabetes and many chronic health conditions, we've got to realize there usually is a genetic predisposition, but the expression of that is modified by our interactions with our environments. And as we'll learn this weekend, that goes from the worlds within our body to the worlds without, and spans a wide variety of environmental interactions that can create different phenotypes or expressions of health or not.
It's great that we're able to have this conversation, and very often the research lags behind what's available in the clinic. So a short publication may come, it may make headline news. For example, on these podcasts, we've spoken about that expensive antibody that's available in some markets, particularly in North America, that can prolong the honeymoon period for up to 2 years. And the tens of thousands of dollars it costs is particularly appropriate in a setting for type 1 diabetes if you follow this particular path. Very often, it's many, many years away from bringing that laboratory work, such as the genetics, into clinical practice, which I understand is damn frustrating for many people with diabetes because, you know, you want this sorted out as quickly as possible. But good to know that research is ongoing and that we can continue to engage and teach healthcare practitioners, as I'm looking forward to do over the next couple of days.
Right. Excellent reminder, Stan. I just wanted to follow up on what we were talking about last week, keeping in contact with your diabetes care team on an emergency basis. And just to discuss a couple of important issues around that. If you're going to be phoning a 24-hour hotline such as the CDE provides to its clients, make sure that you know what the problem is. Be brief and focused. You should take no more than 30 to 60 seconds to clearly state what the actual issue is. Whilst in the consultation, we are very open to narrative stories because we want to hear the whole story. An emergency setting demands that we are clear and we state that my blood glucose is, say, 27. I have 3+ ketones in my urine. I'm feeling a bit nauseous. I forgot my long-acting insulin last night. That will help us to focus and If we need to know anything more, we will certainly ask it. The other thing I'd like to highlight is that in our education consultations, we give you all the tools you need to manage such emergency situations. And of course, many of those tools we use routinely, things like blood glucose meters or CGMs, continuous glucose monitors, your insulin pens, tablets, ketone strips, and so on. Just make sure that you have the necessary. So if you have type 1 diabetes and you phoning, complaining of feeling a bit nauseous, we're going to ask you, what is your ketone reading? And it doesn't help us if you say, well, what's a ketone? Firstly, we would have taught you that. But secondly, I don't have the strips. I forgot to get them. Or if you're on an insulin pump and your insulin pump dropped in the pool and usually happens on a weekend and it will take a day or two to get your insulin pump replaced, have you got some rapid and long-acting insulin to take over with injections? Oh no, I don't bother with that. It makes it very difficult, if not impossible, for us to help you over the phone. So just keep those important things in mind and we can help keep you well in the community, keep you out of hospital and help you to live a full and quality life.
We should expand on that even, Michael, that once you've had this kind of interruption of this urgent care, it's probably worthwhile when the dust settles, letting your healthcare team know, because your engagement may have only been in the emergency setting with the nurse practitioner, at least in our clinic scenario. And it may be important just to add to the clinical record that you did have this uncomplicated urinary tract infection or you passed a kidney stone, because that becomes part of the narrative so that the next time the story is understood, everybody involved and not just the person who answered the phone becomes aware of that.
Exactly.
And again, diabetes, because it's a long-term condition, you want to keep the narrative flowing so that everybody shares that input all the time.
Absolutely, Stan. I think you've made a very important point that there must be closure to any emergency call. We need to figure out what happened, why it happened, and most importantly, how to prevent it. And for that to happen, it needs to be part of your ongoing treatment record. So it's with great anticipation that we introduce our next studio guest, Lorena Furie. She's known as the glucose glitch. We'd like to hear a bit more about that. Lorena is a professional photographer living with type 1 diabetes. She's also an absolutely amazing advocate for people living with type 1 diabetes, content creator, and she's an artist. Just had a look at your Instagram and Facebook profiles for your photography, Lorena, and you really have an amazing eye. I dabble in photography myself, and I must compliment your compositions and focusing in on things that other people would not see. And that brings to mind a favorite saying of mine from the Swiss-born German artist Paul Klee, who died in 1940. He said that art does not reflect what is seen. Rather, it makes the hidden visible. And I think in your work, Lorena, I see that very plainly. Before I introduce you, I'd like to read a poem that you have penned, and it's a very depressing poem, but at the end of the show, there's going to be an amazing positive twist on this poem, so don't let this poem fool you. And this is how often people view the experience of living with diabetes. So here we go. This is me. Diabetes is stronger than I am. I'm a useless failure. And I will never believe that. I am confident, focused, and fearless, because no matter what, I despise who I am. I won't lie to myself by saying I am greater than my highs and lows, that I love myself and I'm doing my best. I will continue to remind myself that I'm a mess and not good enough. My diabetes defines me and I am weak. I'll never think that I'm flourishing. Every day I wake up, I'm not worthy of victory or joy. I will never accept that courage and resilience exist within me. Every time I look in the mirror, I know this is me. Wow. Lorena, tell us why that should be nonsense.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. When I wrote the poem, obviously it came from personal experience. I think that is how most people feel when they are diagnosed with any chronic condition, but especially type 1 diabetes. And then after living with it for years, I've been living with it for 23 years, you realize that thinking that way is not going to change anything. And getting stuck in that kind of emotions won't help at all. And you find little ways to see the light in things. And once you start changing your mind, how you think about things and how you accept your reality, you realize that there are ways to move past it. And if you keep thinking that you are a mess or that you're not worthy of good things, that's how your life is going to be. So obviously in the end, when you read the poem, you will see the actual message of it. And I really hope that when people read it, they will be able to relate to the negative parts, but that the positive part of it will come through and they will realize that it's not a death sentence to live with a chronic condition and there are ways to still have a positive and happy life.
So tell us some of those positive ways, Lerena.
A few years back, I found myself in a state of burnout. I didn't know burnout was an actual thing. I just thought I was fed up with everything regarding my diabetes. And then I started turning to the community. I joined groups on social media. And when I saw what people were saying, I immediately realized that I was not the only one feeling the things I was feeling. And at first, I didn't say a word. I was just sitting there observing what people were saying. And then as I started getting more confidence, I started sharing a bit of my stories as well. And I could see people actually listened to what I was saying. They could relate to what I was saying as I was relating to what they were saying. And just finding that community, that is an absolute highlight in my life, because I've been living with type 1 for a long time, but I never had any way to share it with anyone. I'm married. My husband is an excellent supporter. My family supports me, but they live with diabetes on the outside and I have it on the inside as well as on the outside. And an absolute highlight for me was to find people who really get what I'm saying. I once read this quote that said, no one gets it until they get it. And that is so true when it comes to type 1 diabetes. And for me, one of the positive things definitely was finding a community, not just my age or people with the same story, but a global community to hear from somebody in America or somebody in the UK saying the exact same thing. It broadened my horizon quite a bit. And that is definitely, I'd say, the largest tool that I found to be able to deal with my reality a bit easier. There are many highlights. Getting a good number after eating a pizza lasting for only like 3 minutes, or waking up seeing you've been in range all night, or just seeing another person living with diabetes and having a quick chat. Hi, how are you? This is my story. What's your story? But definitely the community that I've built and that I've found and still discovering every time that I speak to a new person living with diabetes, that is definitely one of the absolute highlights for me.
My kids were growing up, there was that amazing movie Wreck-It Ralph, and I remember there was a character in that movie called The Glitch, and your handle here is The Glucose Glitch, and if I remember her correctly, she was this character who was marginalized, she was kind of different to everybody else. How did you get your handle of The Glitch? Has it got anything to do with that cartoon movie?
Actually, no, not at all. I was looking for a catchy name. I like catchy names and things to be creative, and there's always some sort of glitch when it comes to diabetes. That's my opinion. But once you get your numbers in range, when my HbA1c is good, my cholesterol is high. When my cholesterol is good, my HbA1c is high. When I start exercising, I'm having lows. Then I start eating food to raise my blood sugar. Then I start gaining weight again. So I just thought there's always some sort of glitch when it comes to managing my blood sugar. So there's a glitch in the glucose, actually in the pancreas, but there's just always a glitch when it comes to managing my type 1 diabetes. So it's a bit of a tongue-in-the-cheek name, but I think people can actually relate to it. Nothing is ever just perfect when it comes to living with type 1 diabetes.
I think you've said that very well. And one of the things that I see in clinical practice, which resonates very much so with what you've said, is I'll be referred a person with poorly managed diabetes for whatever reason. And the expectation of the referring practitioner is sort the diabetes out so that we can take the kidney stone out next week, Tuesday. And they have this expectation that it's a straight line between where the person with diabetes is now and where we can get that person in 2 weeks or whatever time period the mandate says. And you've said it very well, that there are all of these attributes and glitches that can happen, whether they be on the inside, whether they be on the outside, that need to be articulated and spoken about, because you have this expectation that the doctor will make everything right. And I think as healthcare providers, we need to be more sensitized to that recognition. And you've said it very well. Thank you for that.
I must say, despite the glitches, just looking at your face, I'm seeing a very happy and looks like fulfilled person.
Thanks.
So just tell us how you get around. What are the main tools around the glitches that help you to negotiate them?
I'm a very positive person, as you've seen now.
Right.
So for me, when something is not right, I want to fix it. And I won't stop until I can find the answer to try and fix it. Everything can't always be fixed, so you need to move around it. But I once met a lady who did a motivational talk, and she spoke about her life and how she had bad marriages for years. And then her son, when he turned 21, it was the first time they actually were able to afford their own flat to move into. And they were so happy. It was the happiest moment of their life to move into this flat. And then a week later, her son sold his car on an internet site, and he got shot. And he died. And then she said she could have parked her car there and stayed in that situation for the rest of her life. But she decided to not park her car there. Mm. She parked her car and she lived through the moment, but she moved on. And her message was so powerful because we are so stuck in our little worlds, what's going wrong with it, that we forget to realize what's going right with it. And we can't park our cars in this reality of the trouble or the challenges of living with type 1 diabetes because it will consume us. It's already a consuming condition. It's with us every second of the day. Even when I'm asleep, I still need to take care of myself.
Mm.
And I know it's easy to say, just put it aside, because you can't put it aside, but finding ways to realize I'm not just a person living with diabetes. I'm still a friendly person. I'm still a good friend. I'm still loyal. I still enjoy the good things in life. I may still enjoy good food. I just need to manage it and find a way to balance it, which is obviously difficult. I wasn't always feeling good about my diabetes. I've been through my burnouts, and there's been times. One time my husband was on a trip to Pretoria and I was home alone for about 2 weeks, and our daughter was in hospital. It's my stepdaughter, but she was in hospital and I had to take care of her. Our dog had to be put down and he was out of town and everything was just too much for me. And as he came home and he walked in, before even saying hi, he could see on my face I was not myself. And he's like, "What's wrong?" And I just bursted out in tears and I said, "I can't have diabetes today." And he was like, "Okay, how can I help you? I can't fix this, but how can I help you?" And just that reset button you get to press every single day. Sometimes it's depressing to think, let's reset again. Just last night, I was thinking to myself, you know, the game Snakes and Ladders, where you keep climbing the ladder, and just before you get to the 100, there's that snake taking you down again.
On 99.
Exactly. So every day when I look at my stats on my freestyle app, then let's say I'm 59% in range. Now I'm like, okay, let's start climbing the ladder again. Here we go. Roll the dice. Move up, move up. And then a day or what later, I'm at 98% time in range. And I'm like, okay, am I going to get that snake now? Is going to take me down again? Or am I going to roll the dice just right to move 2 points forward to get my 100%? So it's a constant juggle. It's a constant juggle.
Do you find it easy to have these conversations with your healthcare providers? Do you have a sense of judgment? Has that changed in the years you've had diabetes when you've gone for your routine assessments?
Usually when I went for my assessments, I'll be quite nervous because I felt judged, first of all, and they don't really understand what I'm saying. I can say, "Listen, yeah, I had a pizza last week and it didn't work out," or "I really want a milkshake." And the first thing that usually comes out is, "But you shouldn't be eating that." Then I keep telling them, my pancreas might not work properly, but my taste buds still work. I still crave things and I still want things. My taste buds do not have type 1 diabetes, okay? But since I gained more confidence with trying to manage my diabetes, and since I educated myself more and I came to terms with the fact that we're all struggling and we all make mistakes and it's going to be like that for the rest of our lives, we're going to keep experimenting and trying new things, it gives me more confidence when I walk into the consultation room to say, "This is what I tried. It did not work out. Do you have any way to maybe make it better?" And I've lived with it long enough now. I don't have to agree with everything that they say. I'm always open to learn more and to listen and to get more information. But I now have the confidence to stand up for myself and say, "I think I know a bit more than you in certain areas. But how can we combine the information with your knowledge and my experience to try and get a proper understanding?"
Absolutely. As health providers, we can never match your lived experience of diabetes. And as you say, there's so much that we can learn from people with diabetes. And together, we actually are an unstoppable team.
Lorena, it follows on from here that given the experiences you've had with diabetes and the passion you display when just talking about it, what's been your role in an advocacy setting in diabetes? And why is advocacy important for you in diabetes?
When I was diagnosed, I was 16 years old. I'm speaking on my own behalf, but I think most teenagers, they just want to blend in. You're already in a bit of a strange phase in your life. You're not a child anymore, but you're not a grown-up either. So I had no one to talk to. I didn't know anything about diabetes. Mm-hmm. We had no family history of it. And I just wanted to get back to my life as I knew it. But when I got back to school, I was in hospital for a week and then another few days. And then I was out of school for about 2 weeks. And when I got back, one of the first things the kids said to me, "Oh, we thought you were dying." And it gave me such a shock because they were actually spot on with it, but I was getting better and I was finding my feet in my new life. And if I only had someone that I could have talked to back then, oh. I know there's always options to talk to someone, but I didn't have the know-how of saying to my parents, "I think I need to speak to someone." I didn't grow up in a super emotional house. So if you looked fine, you were fine. We never spoke about emotions. And if I knew there were options to speak to people, I think it would have made a huge difference. I couldn't speak to my friends because then it became a pity party. "Oh, we're so sorry," or "Oh, shame." Why do you say to someone who's just been diagnosed with type 1 diabetes? There's nothing good that you can actually say to them in that moment because they just see the black hole that they are in. So I created a game, which is more for primary school children. My main focus, I don't want to educate the world about diabetes. There are enough people doing that, and we can never do enough education in that department. But my goal is not to teach the warning signs or anything like that. I want to create a more comfortable environment for the person living with diabetes. So let's say there's a 30-year-old person in an office environment. There's a low blood sugar happening. The colleagues, they don't always get it because now you're low, you stop what you're doing, but half an hour later, you're back on your feet again and you keep going. So it can easily look as if you're trying to manipulate the situation, even though that's not the reality of it. But if I can go to the office and speak to the colleagues, a casual chat like we're having now, I'll even take up cakes and say, "Let's just talk about diabetes. What are your questions?" Speak on behalf of the person living with the diabetes, because when it comes from a different angle, I think people accept it a little bit better. So that is why I created this game for primary school children, where I visit the schools where there are kids living with diabetes. I don't want to stand in the hall with 1,000 kids looking at me with absolute no interest in diabetes. I want to go where I know there's difference to be made. So then it's a lot of liaising beforehand. I need to contact the school, chat to the parents, get consent from everyone. And then I go to the school and usually the child living with type 1 will join me in front of the classroom. And then we talk about low blood sugar because I have about 20 minutes with their attention span and with the schedules of the schools. So for an 8 or 9 year old to understand everything about diabetes, it's just too much. I can't walk in there and explain everything to them. I don't even know everything. So we focus on low blood sugar because that is a direct threat in the classroom and on the playground. So with the game, I teach them how to look out for the warning signs of type 1 diabetes. And then usually the child is quite excited to have me there. And then they'll participate in the conversation. And each child receives a game that they take home with them. So they play it with their friends, with their brothers and sisters. They go show it to their parents because they're excited about it. And then the parents also learn about low blood sugar. So next time when there's a sleepover, they'll feel a bit less nervous because they know the information and it's fun. The kids are so excited about the game. And I made a big one that I use in the classroom. So they all want to play with it and be part of it. And in a fun and light manner, the information is spread out and more people learn about it and they don't even realize that they're learning about it.
Wonderful. It's amazing how you use your creativity to enhance the growing advocacy efforts in South Africa. With that in mind, let's take a break to hear our latest advocacy message from SA Diabetes Advocacy. Here we go.
Most people living with diabetes have heard about continuous glucose monitoring and how life-changing these devices can be. However, they still come at a great expense and are inaccessible to most people. We continue the fight with private healthcare funders, the public healthcare system, and device manufacturers to make sensing technology more accessible to South Africans with diabetes. We believe that every person living with diabetes has the right to use any medication and technology that they feel is right for them. However, we would like to share our concerns and make sure that anyone that is testing out new technology is equipped with all the information they need to make an informed choice when it comes to diabetes tech. While we welcome new and cheaper alternatives to continuous glucose monitoring in South Africa, we are equally concerned about the accuracy of certain products coming into the market. An inaccurate sensor can mean the difference between treating a hypo and needing emergency attention. For more information on the latest CGM technology in South Africa, please visit our website at diabetesadvocacy.org.za and read our latest article under campaigns.
Thank you very much, Kirsten. You have raised an important issue, and the rising power of advocacy is evident in South Africa, and we're going to see a lot of good coming from this as people take on more responsibility in their self-management. Lerena, we know that support is so important. Tell us about support from your husband, Stain.
I always try to include him. He's part of my journey. It's his journey just as mine. He works just as hard as me to try and make it work. So I always say when one person is diagnosed, the whole household is diagnosed. When we met, he knew nothing about diabetes. So I always joke and say, maybe because he knew nothing, he was willing to marry me. He didn't run away when he heard I had type 1 diabetes. I was only 3 years into my diagnosis then, so it was still a bit messy. And he stuck through it all. So we've been going for 19 years now. So I think he's a keeper.
Wonderful. Lerena, tell us about how you've used your photographic skills in advocacy.
That is an interesting question. There's this quote that says, my eyes are my favorite part of me, not for what they look, but for what they see. And I'm quite a detailed person and I love macro photography. And when it's flower season in the West Coast, I just love going into the field and I'll sit in the flowers for hours and it's a whole new world opening up.
Mm.
And diabetes is a detail-orientated condition. You need to see all the little parts of it to form the bigger picture.
Absolutely.
And so many times I've seen that where I spend a day in the field and I enjoy all the little things or just seeing a water drop and focusing on that. And then when I take it back to my diabetes management, you need to find the little spots that makes the bigger picture, because I can get up every morning high and I think to myself, but I didn't eat anything bad like yesterday. Nothing happened that I shouldn't have been eating, or why is my blood sugar high? But you can't just look at that one thing.
Mm.
There's so many little spots that makes up the bigger picture, and the detail, you need to continue to look at the detail. It's all part of the big picture.
Almost like looking at the old newspaper photographs, where if you look very close, all you see is pixels. And then as you go out, the pixels coalesce into an image that now makes sense.
100%. Also, with the complications of diabetes, eye complications, it's a reality to me because I cannot imagine my life without having my camera right next to me. So that is one of the absolute main reasons why I try to take care of myself, mm-hmm. because I have this thought in my head, and it's maybe a bit harsh to say, but if I should lose my sight, I think I'll also lose my vision, because everything I see around me is what makes me tick. I see everything in frames, and when I see something beautiful, I want to go closer or stand a bit further away to see what it looks like from a different angle. So eye complications is really a major concern in my life, because photography is my life.
When Michael mentioned that you were going to be joining us today, I went and had a look at your social media sites. And it's interesting because on your Insta site, it says, I didn't come here to be average.
Mm.
I think that says it very well. Mm. You know, if there's one word that comes to mind, it's not just advocacy for me. It's almost a muscular advocacy.
Yes.
It's the actual rolling up those shirt sleeves and getting down and dirty and advocating, and particularly the story you spoke about in terms of the school setting. And we've heard from a community pharmacist who's doing likewise in a community. And we've heard from airline pilots who are literally taking that to the skies, excuse the pun. But when we've interviewed our studio guests here, Michael, we really see advocacy in action as opposed to this theoretical construct put in place by industry or doctors or healthcare providers.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people with diabetes who are getting down and dirty, as I say, and getting this needle moved in the right direction. And that's very pleasing, because 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I just provided diabetes care.
For sure.
The landscape has changed immensely for the better.
For sure, for sure. What I loved, Lerena, you brought up just now the concept of how for you, your vision, there's a big difference between being able to see, and you used a very important word, your vision, which I think to me encompasses not just the pixels of light entering your eye, but it actually means to see the unseen, like Paul Klee alluded to in his quote.
Yes.
It's probably worthy of healthcare professionals to get to understand each of their clients' passions, because that may be the hook that helps them to understand the importance of diabetes care. And it may be a reason to facilitate that person to choose a healthier path. I'm reminded of a story of an elderly lady who habitually ran her HbA1cs above 10. She had no real incentive to manage her diabetes better until one day she visited a psychologist on the basis of our referral. And the psychologist said to her, you're getting advanced in your years now. What is the most important thing you would like to do or see before you pass away? And she said, I want to see my granddaughter walking down the aisle with her new husband. And the psychologist said to her, what are you doing to make sure that you fulfill that dream? And in that instant, the older lady realized that she was doing nothing to reach that dream. And within months, she had changed the trajectory of her diabetes care to manage it to a point where her risk was reduced, such that the possibility of her fulfilling that dream would be realized. So thank you for that.
Nice commentary there, Michael. Really nice imagery. Lorena, as we begin to wind up this podcast, and I look back at the variety of guests we've interviewed over these 36 podcasts, we've had people who have really had straight up and narrow jobs in the old sense, and we've seen somebody such as yourself in the creative arts. And it doesn't matter where you lie professionally. Mm. The messages here are the hope and optimism for the management of diabetes in the modern day, even for people like Elizabeth, who have been going for 50 plus years with type 1 diabetes, that sense that it can be done. It's not easy, as I understand it. Does take a lot of hard work, that there are going to be these off days. There may be many more off days, but ultimately there's the positive reassurance that within the wider community, managing diabetes in the modern day is something that is within reach of many people. And you've alluded to the fact that you are fortunate to use one of these continuous blood glucose monitoring. So I hope that your diabetes journey in the years ahead is going to remain good. Are you anxious about the diabetes burnout that you had spoken about making an appearance in years to come, just given the fact that the diabetes would continue another 10 years, another 20 years and 30 years and so on? Is that something that sits in your mind at some point?
Definitely, yes. As we grow older, there are more realities kicking in. My husband had a triple bypass last year, December, and then in April, he had his gallbladder removed. So we were quite thrown into the deep end of the ocean when it came to the reality of health issues just arising out of nowhere. And it opened my eyes a bit, because now it's going well with me and I'm healthy and I'm living a good life. But what if I do get complications of any kind? It is still a reality. Even though I'm maybe well controlled, I haven't always been well controlled. And who knows what lies ahead? And that has been one of the biggest things I had to face when I was diagnosed as well, because here I am, this 16-year-old person, and I have to understand that I might go blind, or I might have kidney failure, or I might have to deal with an amputation later in my life. And that is not things you want to hear about or have to face at that age, knowing that it could happen years from now. And it was a depressing thought for quite a long time, but so many things we reminisce about or stress about never really happens. How many things have you stressed about in your life and it never happened? You were sitting there thinking, how am I going to do this? What if this happens? So I decided, and it's not that easy, but I decided I'm not going to waste the time that I've got here. I'm not going to waste it worrying and wondering what if. If I worry now about what if I lose a leg at the age of 60 or 70, there's still 30 years ahead of me. Things will change in 30 years from now. I can't think now, what will I do if I lose a leg, or what will I do if maybe my eyesight is affected? 30 years from now, the picture will look a whole lot different. Technology will change. Everything will be different. So I need to be aware of it. I can't let go. I need to be aware of the reality. There is a possibility of maybe it could happen to me, but I can't live now as if it's already happening to me. I can't steal today's joy for the worries of tomorrow or the day after that. Then we'll never have joy. There will always be something to worry about, and complications and burnout, if it comes, there will be ways to deal with it. For every problem you have, there is some sort of solution. Even if it's not the solution you were hoping for, there is some way to work around it. So if that burnout comes, I'll need to face it. I'll need to acknowledge it. It's there. I can't say it's not there. Whatever the complication is, whether it's emotional, physical, whatever, face it and deal with it. There's nothing else you can do.
Your optimism is infectious.
Incredible. Incredible. And I think it's at this point we need to read your poem again.
Okay.
But as we said in the beginning, there's a major twist on this. This is what's called a form of reverse poetry, which means if you read it from the bottom to the top, you will get an entirely different message from having read it top to bottom. So here we go. This is me. Every time I look in the mirror, I know courage and resilience exist within me. I will never accept that I am not worthy of victory or joy. Every day I wake up, I am flourishing. I'll never think that my diabetes defines me and I am weak, that I'm a mess and not good enough. I will continue to remind myself that I love myself and I'm doing my best. I'm greater than my highs and lows. I won't lie to myself by saying I despise who I am, because no matter what, I am confident, focused, and fearless. I will never believe that I'm a useless failure and that diabetes is stronger than I am. This is me. Thank you for sharing that poem. I couldn't believe the difference in the emotion, the meaning, and it's just about the old story of the two guys who were trapped in prison, looking out through the bars. One looked down and saw mud, and the other one looked up and saw stars. This poem gives us a wonderful window into how we can live life, and that often our experience of life depends on how we look at the life, the perspective we take. So thank you for joining us, Lorena. I think you've given us a lot to think about. You seem to be very active on social media. Would you be happy to share some of your social media handles if you'd like people to follow you?
Yes, thank you very much. Michael, if the diabetes industry gets too much for you, you can always go into reading poems, I think.
Oh, thank you.
There's a backup there for you. I'll keep writing them and you can keep reading them. How's that?
Wonderful. Wonderful.
Maybe Stan can do some backup music for us. I'm not sure. My social media handles, I'm on TikTok. I recently joined TikTok. I'm 40, so I thought maybe I'm too old for TikTok. But then with the schools that I visit, I thought, okay, TikTok is maybe not a bad idea.
Yeah.
So I'm most active on Instagram. I also do have a private group on Facebook, also the Glucose Glitch. I chose a private group because people come there to vent and they don't want their families or their friends to see what they vent about. So it's not a very active group, but it's a safe space for people if they want to ask questions or just want to share their thoughts and their feelings.
Right.
And then my YouTube channel is also the Glucose Glitch. So the glitch continues everywhere you go. So that's my social media handle, the Glucose Glitch.
I mean, Lorena, it's been fantastic. Your optimism is infectious, as I said. It's been absolutely amazing having you with us as a guest on our 36th episode on our podcast. Thank you so much for you and for our listeners out there who have joined us. Listeners, if this story resonates with you and you want to share your experiences, whether they have been positive or how you've overcome any of the adverse aspects that can challenge the management of diabetes, drop us an email at podcast@cdediabetes.co.za. For me, for the week ahead, plenty learning, looking forward to this amazing Congress we have ahead, and I look forward to you joining us for our 37th episode next week. Over and out from me.
Lorena, thank you so much for blessing us with your presence.
Thanks for having me.
We wish our listeners a blessed week ahead. And we're going to play out with a few bars of music from your husband, Stain Fury, who is a wonderful jazz musician. And we look forward to being with you again next week. Thank you for joining us. Over and out.
I'm greater. I'm greater than my highs and lows. I'm greater than my highs and lows.
Thank you for joining us on Not Artificially Sweetened, where we aim to build bridges of insight and understanding between people with diabetes and the health professionals that facilitate their care. Anything we discuss is for your reflection, education, personal growth, and entertainment only. You join this podcast at your own risk, and we are not responsible for any omissions, errors, or unwanted medical outcomes. Please note the following important, specific disclaimers. For people with diabetes, the health professionals on this podcast are not your personal caregivers. Always discuss any new information with your diabetes team before acting on any aspect of it. The views and opinions discussed are those of the hosts only and do not represent those of any other entity. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you encounter in this session. Anything you learn or experience here cannot substitute for personalized, professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. For health professionals working in diabetes, always discuss any new information with your clinical team before acting on any aspect of it. You are personally accountable and liable for any choices made in a clinical setting according to your level of training and legal scope of practice. Any information or insights gained here must be used with your professional discretion and with the developing base of clinical evidence, local and organizational laws, regulations, guidelines, and protocols. Good luck with your diabetes care missions. Till next time.
And it's a wrap.
Yay!